This is the Freedom Fiends, broadcasting from Pod Bay 2A, a mile above sea level at Intergalactic Prairie Studios on the corner of Trash View and Nata Vista. Please put on your 3D glasses now. We alter your locus aurelius by warming your synapses with rejuvenative radio waves. This warms your brain to a tasty and toasty 420 kelvins to keep a sin flood of statism out of your head. Can you feel it? Is it working? Can you feel it, Shane and John?
It's working.
Every day.
All right. And as always, the Freedom Fiends is covered by a paper cap, no government license. This allows reuse by anyone except governments. Learn more at pipcot.org. All right. So we are back. It's Sunday night, Monday morning. This is the Freedom Fiends. I am Jeremy, joined tonight, as usual, by Shane and John. What's up, fellas?
Hello.
What up?
Hey. Before we start the show, and John immediately starts buffering, great. We're going to be in for an interesting evening. But, I know for you guys it's normally a week since you've been on, but it's been a week for me because we ended up not doing a show again last Tuesday night. Really bad. Kind of everybody dropped the ball and forgot to tell, you know, good people here at GCN that we weren't coming on. That was a big mess, but I take responsibility for my end. I should have followed up on that. But
were you supposed to be on that night?
Well, I told Michael that I wasn't, like, we didn't have a host because Diana called, was, you know, Diana had the flu. Michael was like, Diana was dying. Michael was dying. Daryl had some really bad issues with something and it was just like a whole big mess. And I gave Michael plenty of warning, but he was so sick that he slept through it and didn't get my message and forgot to contact the GCN. And I didn't bother to follow up, which I should have. That was totally my bad because I didn't hear back from him. So I felt bad because I kept saying I wanted to do one of these days. I was going to try to do a solo show like Lou's been doing lately.
Yeah.
And I just wanted to be able to prep for it first. And Tuesday night, I had not prepped for it yet. And I was like, I don't know if I'm quite.
Fiend phone.
Yeah. Oh, look at that. John's good. John's
sorry about that.
It's okay. little droning, never hurt any of us. Too bad, I guess. As long as you make it back, we're all good. But yeah. Anyway, so yeah. So it's been a while since I've been here now.
But I wish I could be available more nights a week, but my job schedule is just brutal lately. So Sundays are the only ones I can kind of make.
Yeah, it's tough for most people. Like, you know, I mean, most of us that are still around here are on a relatively set schedule, and you know, it kind of makes sense that way. And you know, like I said, I was planning on doing one anyway. I wasn't prepared, so we didn't do one Tuesday night. But I think I have one lined up for the next time that situation arises. I even have the perfect title for everything. You know, some digs at Lou. It's going to be great. Look forward to that, folks. But
baked bacon.
Yeah, but well, there'll be plenty of that. Ooh, I do love baked bacon. Anyway,
me too.
I don't know what's up with you guys. It's been like a weird thing for me. Like, there's a whole bunch of stuff going on lately. I got reminded again pretty early today of how much older poor Murder Dog is getting over here. You know, she's going to be, I think, 11 this summer. And she's definitely starting to slow down. Her poor, like, it's, you can tell, like, the little things, like the even the muscles in her legs aren't as strong anymore because she starts to slide on the tile floor as she tries to sit, you know, if she tries to sit next to you so she can get some pets in. Her feet start to slip out from under her every once in a while because they just don't have the grip anymore that they used to. And She like kind of tripped going up the stairs multiple times in the past couple of days. And today on her way down the stairs, like the last two or three stairs, she just completely lost it and fell down the stairs. I'm like, oh man,
poor doggo.
Yeah. I mean, you know, kind of, it had to happen eventually, but it's just like, she's been such a workhorse with me this entire time. You know, I've had her since, you know, a couple of years into my business. So she kind of was with me through most of that, and it's just kind of like, it's, you know, it's sad to look at. It's like, oh man. I mean, she's far from done,
incredibly.
But she's far from done, but she's got, you know, she's always had issues as it is because the poor thing was you know, I got her to rescue, and because of the stupid laws, thanks government, she was spayed too early, and ended up with juvenile incontinence. So she's been on drugs that most dogs are on, like after they're 10 or 12 years old. She's been on them since she was around 2. And she has she's always had leg issues anyway, because she was born with what's called, what is it? It's a luxating patellas, where both of her kneecaps can just randomly dislocate at any time. And, you know, when they pop out, it's not usually painful. Popping them back in is what's painful.
Wow. And, rough.
Yeah. And when she was younger, they were thinking that she might need, you know, surgery, because they're, you know, they just like everything else with that type of stuff. They graded on there's a scale they graded on, and they're like, all right, she's kind of here on the scale at this point. If she gets it to this point, then you're going to have to think about doing surgery, because it's kind of hard to reverse at that point, and yada, you know, whole big thing. And luckily with supplements and everything, and just giving her good food and kind of working her, not super hard, but continuously giving her like really good exercise, it actually seemed to combat that. But now again, because she's getting older, it's kind of catching up to her. And when she falls down the stairs, it's the first thing I think of, because of course she comes up limping, and she's a trooper. She doesn't make a lot of noise. She didn't cry. She didn't yell out. She just kind of walks around with the one leg popped up in the air until it fixes itself, and then she can start walking again. But man, it's depressing, you know. It's my buddy. I've had, you know, she's been around longer than my kids. She's been around longer than Jen.
Yeah, I mean, my dog's only like 3 or something, and I think about that stuff all the time. You know what I mean? Just because it's such a part of my life, you know?
I ended up with custody of our cat, but he's still young and has a long time to go before he starts having problems.
Well, yeah, hopefully. I mean, I've unfortunately been through so many animals in my life that I've had even younger ones that have had issues. But it's weird, because the whole time running my business, I was, you know, faced with death on a fairly, you know, not super regular basis, but every year I would lose a handful or so of clients because they would pass away, because they had been with me for years, or I'd met them when they were already older or whatever. And, you know, so I was constantly dealing with that. And I kind of thought I was desensitized. Maybe I did get desensitized to it to a certain extent, because I really didn't think of it in terms of murder dog, even though she was like, you know, getting older with me and everybody else every year. It just kind of, it wasn't until all the other dogs were gone, and it was just kind of like her around here now. And I still see some of the dogs that, you know, the couple of clients that I kept on after the fact that I still walk and stuff, but there's no other dogs here anymore. So she's the only one. So I just can't, like, I see nothing but her. And I guess I'm picking up even more now on all the little problems she has. And, yeah. It doubly stinks, because unfortunately, you know, with my current situation, money's tight as it is, and I'm like, I can't afford it. It's like, I took her to the vet the other day because she had to get blood work, because the drug she's on for the peeing problem, she has to get blood tested twice a year. She has to get her blood tested twice a year to make sure it's not giving her any problems with her kidneys or her liver or stuff like that. And on that, on the recent visit to the vet where I went to get that blood work done, they determined that she's like, now of course, you know, adding more problems to her, she's hyperthyroid, which means she has to be on medication for that for the rest of her life. And we still have to balance that whole thing out. And yeah, it's like, oh man, getting old sucks, as you know, for me. But yeah, I'll probably end up taking better care of her than I will myself.
Yeah, some whatever. Of us are like that.
Yeah. Well, I feel she's earned it, man. She's worked hard with me for years. You know, she was the peacekeeper for the longest time with all the other dogs. She kind of kept all the other dogs in check. She would keep when I had puppies come here for daycare or to stay overnight and stuff like that, she was the one that always would kind of play with them to a certain extent, but also where some of the dogs would just kind of be completely standoffish with the puppies, which I didn't really blame them for, because, you know, puppies could be kind of annoying after a while when they want to just jump and play, and the older dog's just like, all right, I've had enough, leave me alone. But she would kind of be able to balance that between still being able to play with them for you know, for quite a few years, and then quickly turning around and putting them in their place when they needed to be, which, you know, made my life easier, but my clients also appreciated too, because they also most of my clients were the good pet owners, as I consider them. the ones that actually understand that you can't just let your dog run wild. You have to give it boundaries and all that type of thing. And teaching it to interact with other dogs by letting an older, more experienced dog put in its place, not to be mean, not to hurt it, but to kind of be like, hey, this is the boundaries here. And you can't do that stuff.
You know? From what I've heard, dogs are pack animals and you have to have them see you as the pack leader or else they're going to be, you know, very mischievous.
That's largely true in my experience. I mean, that's the method that Cesar Millan and a bunch of other people teach. And there's plenty of other people, of course, in the dog community that would say that people like us are all crazy and that it's not necessarily true. And because the whole idea of the pack animal thing is the fact that the domesticated dog is originally descended from like wolves and stuff like that. But the counter argument is that they've been so far removed from that element, and even like current day wild dogs aren't a good enough example for them, I guess. But it's, you know, that the counter argument is they're not that much of a pack animal. But all I can say is, using that framework, I had a really great amount of success over the years with just interacting with dogs. And then when I later got into doing behavioral work with dogs and stuff, you know, using that as one of the kind of like cornerstones of my philosophy, like that this is the way things are, and working around that, I had great success. So, you know, whether it's definitely true or not, I don't know. Work for me. Yeah. And again, I had plenty of happy clients who can attest to that as well, that it all kind of worked out that way. So yeah, it definitely seems that way to me, and that's kind of the way I was operated. I was always alpha in the house, and Murder Dog was always kind of my, like, you know, my number two. She would just kind of run around. The best was when we would go out the, you know, actually, which she still does. I don't take her as much anymore, but she, whatchamacallit, out on my daily walks and stuff, she would be the one who kind of keep the other dogs in line. Like if one of them would start barking, you know, a couple of dogs especially that were kind of pains in the butts over the year while we were getting them kind of learned on the proper way to walk. When they would start going nuts, she would literally like jump out in front and face them and bark in their face to kind of be like, hey, enough of that.
Nice.
Yeah, which I never taught her to do. She just kind of picked up on it. You know, when she was younger, she used to, if somebody would walk in the house with a dog and still had a leash, the dog still had a leash attached to it, and they would just like drop the leash to let the dog walk, she would actually pick it up and try to bring the dog to me and try to hand me the leash. Again, never taught her this. She just kind of figured it out over the time. Like, hey, this is what Dad does. Maybe he wants this. Dogs are awesome.
Worms.
But we'll be back after the trip to the market.
You're listening to Freedom Fiends. Go to freedomfiends.com to help keep it drone-proof.
Are you tired of driving your kids to Gigi Allen's grave only to be unable to find the grave because some dick stole the headstone? Well, there is a solution. The Find Gigi Allen's Grave app for Android will give you door-to-grave directions. The Find Gigi Allen's Grave app uses advanced GPS protocols to guide you with voices to the exact patch of dust and grass where Gigi took his final dirt nap. Bring the kids. Do some needle drops at the Gigiest place on Earth. Gigi always had a huge underground following, but it's even bigger now that he's literally underground. So it's no surprise that lots of folks today take a pilgrimage to Gigi's grave. But getting there wasn't easy. Until this app. Forget Graceland, forget the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. Those are plastic places for old people with jobs. Hell, even CBGB's is gone, and that former hallowed ground is now a yuppie coffee bar. The real rock and roll mecca is an unmarked patch of grass in Littleton, New Hampshire, and our free app will show you how to get there. Get the Find Gigi Allen's Grave app today. Even if you're not planning to go there soon, the app is fun. The Find Gigi Allen's Grave app is covered by the BIPCOT No Government License, and it's from the good people at Beast Lick Internet Policy Commission Outreach Team, who also brought you Fiend Phone, the Freedom Fiends radio app, BIPCOT, Meow Bit, and of course, Truth, Justice, American Way. The Find Gigi Allen's Grave app is free. Get it today on the Google Play Store or on Amazon. Your family will thank you. And don't forget to rate and review. Worms, eating Gigi Allen's face.
And we're back. And, well, I guess I've outdone my, out, you know, done enough on the dogs for the time being. I know we're supposed to be about cats around here anyway. But
yeah,
there's some stuff going on in the world that I guess we could talk about. And, you know, I thanked government earlier for their, you know, for the stuff that they did to make my dog's life miserable. Now, of course, they're trying to make everybody's life miserable. Well, a lot of people's lives miserable, I get, and uncountless number, because who knows how many people have actually been helped at this point. But yeah, apparently the FDA just recently declared kratom to be an opioid. I guess yep. That story just came out in the past couple of days. And yeah, man, that's just, I mean, besides wrong.
I happen to be one of the people who kratom has helped. Because I had an accident a couple years ago where I broke my leg in a few different places. And they just said, oh, take aspirin, you know. And I work pretty hard. I do physical labor for a living. And it acts up a lot of times. And sometimes aspirin just doesn't cut it. And that's where kratom kind of fills in the gaps for me and gets me through the day. So, yeah. Any regulation on kratom is going to affect me too.
Yeah, well, I mean, this of course is just a step in the direction of them trying to control anything and everything. Well, you know, once the government has prohibited or at least severely diminished the ability for people to obtain certain substances, you know, most often just to be able to self-medicate, not, you know, sure, there's plenty of people that like to party with different things, but a lot of these situations, especially like with kratom, I'm still going to call it kratom. I know you call it kratom.
I think that's because I used to be into physics and stuff, and it has like the word atom in it, so I just figured it was pronounced that way.
Oh, I don't know. It just doesn't sound right to me. I don't know. Anyway, but yeah, so.
People say hodl, like yodel.
Yeah, I maybe it's a dialect thing. Anyway, before we better lead too far, I guess, you know, for anybody who doesn't know, of course, kratom is a substance. It's actually a plant. It's actually a plant in the coffee family, right? I believe. Yeah.
Right. That's true.
That has been shown, despite what the FDA claims of not having any research to prove anything, yada, 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 like they always claim. There's actually a lot of research that's been done, you know, not through a lot of official channels all the time, because, well, when the government tries to get in the way of things, they make it difficult to have certain stuff done. But there have been studies done, and there has been a lot. There's tons of anecdotal evidence that I know of myself. I mean, I've also taken it, too. But it's been used from like pain relief to actually, people have been shown
weaning themselves off of opiates and stuff.
Exactly,
like that.
Exactly.
Absolutely.
Which is why making it designated as an opioid is just all that more of a slap in the face, because it's like they're claiming that there's no evidence that people are can actually use this to get off opioids. Meanwhile, people are doing it all over the place. And other drugs as well that they've it's been shown to be able to use for that. And like I said, you can use it for pain relief. You know, Jen's used it, and I've talked about it before. She has rheumatoid arthritis, and you know, she's somebody, when I first met her, she was like on a fentanyl patch and popping oxys, you know, constantly throughout the day just to deal with the pain. And she actually, the first time I gave her some of the red kratom, it comes in a couple different strains, I guess. I've gotten red, white, and green, and apparently there's also a gold one that I've heard of. All supposedly have differing effects and stuff like that. First time we gave her the red one, she said it was the first time, like for 2 hours, I think we gave her like 3 grams or whatever it was. And I think she said for two or three hours, it was the first time she had felt completely pain-free. And she couldn't remember, like, ever since, pretty much since she'd been diagnosed with this, which was, I think, like the year before I met her, or shortly before her and I met, or shortly after her and I met, 8 or 9 years ago, which was insane, you know?
And I'm proud to say that ever since my accident, I've pretty much stayed off of opiates altogether, and kratom has helped me do that. And really quick, from the article, it does say kratom is not an opioid. Opioids are derived from poppies, and opioids are man-made opiates. Both opiates and opioids depress the respiratory system and are deadly in this respect as related to overdoses. But kratom is in the coffee family and does not have any properties of opioid-induced respiratory depression. And I can attest to that from taking, you know, kratom versus opiates, that it does not do that.
Yep, Like I said, I've been there, done that too. So I get it, does that too. But yeah, there's plenty of people that can. So this is just, well, I mean, we're going to talk about more of this when we get back. But yeah, this is definitely a power play by the government. And it has nothing to do with this substance actually been proved being harmful to anybody. Worms.
You're listening to Freedom Fiends. So much truth, it hurts.
Is your child defiant, independent, annoyingly inquisitive? After a long, hard day of following the rules, who wants to deal with troublesome kids? 49% of children suffer from oppositional defiant disorder, or ODD. Symptoms of ODD include independent thought, rampant creativity, and failure to submit to authority. But now there's a solution. The good people at Pilfer can help you with their time-release, once-daily capsule, Compliacin. Your child won't be able to form his own opinions, let alone express them. It maintains your child's ability to go to a state-run school and perform simple tasks around the house. You won't have to worry about parenting, and the school won't have to deal with your kid asking questions. Compliacin. You'll go from this.
Quit telling me what to do!
To this.
Good morning, Mother. I love going to school. And this week, we're learning all about how the government is our federal family and they're here to help us.
Compliacin. Talk to your school psychiatrist and ask for it by name.
And we're back. When we got interrupted by the market, we were complaining about government and how they're, of course, working their way to trying again to ban another substance, which is essentially what the, like, you know, stuff with the FDA ruling it as an opioid. That's kind of like the first step in this process, and they've been trying this since, you know, what was it, two years ago at this point. When they first,
yeah,
when
I think
first
that
became,
was when it first started becoming an issue.
When they threatened to ban kratom, and there was a pretty big uproar, and they decided not to. Although that's one of those things that I usually think is just them testing the waters anyway. Like, they had no real intention of doing it then. They were just kind of trying to get a feel for how the public sentiment would be for it, and what they're going to have to do.
I think also they. When situations like that happen and they get an outcry, they just shelve it until people stop paying attention.
Oh, yeah. You know, that's been made famous so many times by different politicians pulling out and even saying that they had, you know, great example was Dianne Feinstein during the Sandy Hook shooting, when she pulled out her gun legislation and proudly proclaimed that it had been sitting in her desk for years, waiting for the right moment to pull it out. Yeah, that's exactly what they do. They come out, they bring it out, they test it out. If it doesn't fly, okay, we'll just put it in a drawer and wait. And then either when another situation arises, we can pull it back again, or we'll just sneak it in another bill somewhere else where nobody's paying attention.
Over the last couple of years, it seems like it's been more of a state-by-state issue, but now the federal government's getting involved.
Well, yeah, because you got the... What did I call him the other day? He's the Keebler Elves tyrannical twin, Jeffy Sessions.
Oh, geez.
Yeah. He's the attorney general now. And of course, he's talked multiple times about being tough on drugs and all this stuff. And you have Trump out there recently talking about being tough on drugs because of the opioid crisis.
Tough on drugs on a Saturday night.
But, you know, talking about how bad the opioid crisis is. So, of course... the big talk everywhere with the problems, the biggest problem is the opioid crisis. So what, of course, is government going to do? Yes, let's try to find a way to ban a substance that is currently being used by the free market in an attempt to stop the opioid crisis.
Exactly.
And of course, the reason they're doing this, it seems, because mentions this in the article, like, you know, I mentioned a little bit before the break, and we started to talk about the claim is that there's no known science behind kratom being used to treat opioid withdrawal. However, they're actually, you know, there's pharmaceutical companies currently using synthetic forms of this with the idea, because there's even patents for this, and there's been patents for some of this for a while, with the sole purpose of it being used to treat opioid addiction.
Exactly. Yeah.
So, you know, again, like things that have happened so many other times, it's the same reason the whole cannabis thing got held up for so long, because there was different agencies and different corporations that were in bed with the government who were trying to get patents on different strains of cannabis, essentially, so they could try to corner the market on this. And they're trying to do the same. They're trying to do the same thing with this, so they can ban the sale of it by any private citizen, you know. But these corporations and these pharmaceutical companies can make the synthetic version, which, you know, if we've learned anything through history, always proves to have a lot more side effects and a lot more bad things come of it. So they can promote that one and claim that they're protecting and, you know, protecting the public at large from the dangers of the street. Like they even said that they call it a street drug, kratom, which is just so insane. Because
I can't believe people even like, yeah, I can't believe that people actually believe this.
Well, it's, you know, anybody with half a brain, I would hope, wouldn't. But again, this is one of these things that I mean, I had never heard of it until 2 years ago when the whole thing started up with the government threatening to ban it, and it started to become a big deal. So I'm sure there's plenty of people who still know either nothing about it, or whatever they do is they get from the news, and it's always been pushed in a negative light. So I'm sure it's not that far-fetched for most people who don't have it in their, like, they don't know anybody in their personal life who's actually ever gotten any, tried any, done, you know, any of this stuff. So just assume that, oh, if they say it's a street drug, sure. I'm sure there's kids down on the corner hanging out with bags of kratom, you know?
You could probably go to places like where, you know, street drugs are traded and ask for kratom, and they probably would not have any idea what you were talking about.
That's quite possible. I mean, and they might, but I'm pretty sure it's not a big seller in that form, because you can still get it. Well, currently you can still get it legally in most places, although I know some states, I think, unfortunately, of course, I think that the state that I'm probably planning on moving to has actually, I don't know if they've actually completely banned it. I know they were trying to. Good old Indiana, but certain states have talked about doing so. So it's again, it's just, it's also they can get the, you know, also they can get the synthetic stuff on the market instead, which is why this is so, as it's pointed out in the article, that's like this would all be really funny, but it's extremely insidious, because the most of the public doesn't see this part of it. They you know, just like I was saying, they just kind of take at face value whatever they're told by these people and go, oh yeah, I don't know anybody uses that stuff. It's got to, you know, the government says this, if it's the FDA's ruling this, then it's got to be bad. Because I've run into plenty of those people who still are willing to make ridiculous arguments about even cannabis based on what the FDA declares. Yeah. Oh, it's a Schedule I drug, so obviously, okay. No, again, you could just, you know, just like with that, you can look into the government's own patents for different things within the cannabis sector that pretty much completely refute what the claim that it has no medical it serves no medical purpose, because that's what a Schedule I is, right? It has no medical benefits whatsoever.
It's supposed to be. Yeah.
Well, yeah, but no, that's what the Schedule I means, right? That's what the, yeah.
Mm-hmm. And it's the same thing with kratom here, because it obviously does have medical, you know, uses, and the pharmaceutical industrial cartel is trying to monopolize those uses.
Yeah, absolutely. And like I said, it's been happened time and time again. And, you know, this article talks about that, you know, there's already specific patents for this stuff. And they, you know, like I said earlier, one of them has been around for quite a while. They, you know, the original one was filed for, I think, in 1964.
Oh, wow.
So, yeah, for which one was this? Called it's one of the alkaloids from kratom called speciofoline, was researched, you know, decades ago, and they filed for a patent back on August 10th of 1964 with the claim that the alkaloid has useful pharmacopsychodynamic activity, I can't speak these big medical words, but anyway, it's talking about how it's used for these purposes way back then. So this information has been there, and since it hasn't been banned banned like a lot yet, like so many of the other drugs have. There actually is research out there, but the FDA is actually going out and telling a bald-faced lie, claiming that there's no, that not only is there, you know, there's maybe suspect research, there's claiming like there's no research whatsoever. And just because they declare what they deem it to be not valid, even though the research is there and it's been there and it's been peer reviewed.
And even though they'll give their crony corporations permission to use it, but not anybody else.
Of course, because they can. Excuse me. I got to go off.
Yeah, okay. Nah, it's all good. Yeah, Shane, do you agree with that?
Oh, I absolutely do. Yeah. And the article does say that there's other studies which the FDA says do not exist, which have been conducted for the purpose of specific task of treating opioid dependency. And I actually do have a personal friend who has gotten off of opiates and stayed off of opiates with the help of kratom. So, you know, I've seen this firsthand in people that, you know, that I know have been able to use it for such things.
Yeah. You mentioned that those earlier, and I know people as well, and yeah, I'm back now. I don't know what happened before. All of a sudden, I get something stuck in my throat, and I'm like, I have to cough. Somebody has to talk, and I have to tell them to talk. This is awkward. Anyway, I know people too, and of course, again, that's anecdotal evidence, but I've run into plenty of anecdotal evidence, which goes along with this research that has been done.
Anecdotal evidence is just research that happens outside of a lab, in my opinion. I think that people always try to disregard anecdotal evidence, but, you know, if you hear, you know, if there is a general, like, you know, if things work for enough people, you could kind of tell, you know what I'm saying? And a lot of these things that we have anecdotal evidence to prove, the studies are either not really trustworthy or they're totally illegal to do. Like in the case of how psychedelics have been up until the past couple of years, you know, it was illegal to do the study. So the only evidence that you had of the, you know, power of psychedelics for healing or mental healing even was, it was forbidden to get that actual research in a lab. So the only evidence you have is anecdotal evidence.
Yeah. And exactly. So they try to paint people into that corner so they can continue to claim what they claim, but, you know, with basically stacking the deck against, you know, in their favor, obviously. And unfortunately, so many people are just ignorant of that. I mean, to this day, I've still run into people who still believe the BS about cannabis from way back in the what was that insane film they made back in the 30s?
Reefer Madness.
Reefer Madness. Yeah, like I've still run into people who still believe that type of nonsense, you know. But that's why it's so, you know, that's why I think it's so important. And up until the point they do actually ban this stuff, that there needs to be research done on this as soon as possible and put out there as much as possible, which is why things like the Kratom Genome Project are so important, because there's actually people working on that right now. And I believe, what's his name? I think his name's Kevin McKernan. We've talked about him on the show before. He's actually, I think he's still a Fiend fan. Hey, I hope he's still a fan of us. I know he's still it's the Michael talking to him online. But yeah, he had worked on the cannabis one, and they're currently working on this so that they can actually make it not for patenting purposes, but to make it so nobody can patent it, because they want to put it out to the public. Open source this stuff, baby. We'll talk about it.
You're listening to the Freedom Fiends, and I'm beaming these words into your cerebellum.
Cell 411 is a great free app for Android and iPhone. It allows you to set up public and private cells for dealing with crime, emergencies, setting up neighborhood watch, activism, and even protecting your kids from bullies on the street or at school. Cell 411 gives your cells turn-by-turn directions to your location with one touch on your phone. There is also a Bluetooth panic button available that can be worn on your wrist, belt, or around your neck. Cell 411 has real-time chat for each alert, so you can discuss the incident with family or friends in real-time video streaming. The video is stored on Cell 411's servers, so your evidence cannot be deleted if your phone is taken or destroyed. Cell 411 has decentralized ride-sharing that allows for payment in any form, crypto, barter, silver, cash, etc. Cell 411 does not take a cut of your fare. Get Cell 411 free on Google Play and the iTunes Store,
or go to GetCell411.com. That's GetCell411.com.
So yeah, we're back, and when we hit the break before, I just started to mention the Kratom Genome Project, which is currently being worked on, which I love this whole idea. I love because the whole purpose of it, it actually, it's quoted here. There's, you know, there's a link to the page I'll put in the show notes, and ways you can actually support this project, which I actually just started doing tonight when I was looking at this, because not only can you donate to it, and there's other things they say you can do, but you can actually torrent the work they're doing, because the purpose of this is basically what it says is, by sequencing the Kratom genome and releasing this information free to the public, we will establish what's considered quote-unquote prior art to render attempts to secure patents moot. So if they're able to accomplish what this means, you know, people could get patents in this later on, not going to matter, because the you know, the whatchamacallit, you can actually patent DNA,
which doesn't seem like a morally right thing to do. Not only that, but like, what would you do in the case where, say, you have a monopoly over this DNA and there's these plants producing the DNA, you know, naturally, you know, where do you go with your legal action towards these plants?
Well, I don't, in that situation, if they're grown, you know, if they're just being grown wildly and nobody's actually taking care of them, or nobody planted whatever it is, like, I don't think you actually have a case in that situation, but I'm sure they could try to find some way, if they have a patent, to try to control that, or at least try to gain access to that to rid the area of that on some other basis, which is complete BS, but that's the kind of thing that usually ends up getting done. So yeah, I could see them trying to do it. Which is why I think this type of project is so important.
I agree.
Because they specifically say they're not trying to get a patent. They're trying to block patents. They're trying to do it right now on this one particular strain, which is the red vein tie. And again, I've used some of this. I'm not super experienced. I've used some red kratom. I hope it's the same type of stuff that I've used, because that's the one that's been helpful for pain for not only me, but, you know, Jen too. So, and plenty of other people I know. So this would be great. And they've already sequenced and published 10 times the amount of kratom nucleotides and bases anyone else has released so far. So, you know, they're way ahead of the curve on this, and they're continuing to work for, you know, and they're putting it out there for free. And if you're somebody like me, like I mentioned earlier, who deals with different torrents, and of course I deal with only torrents that, you know, I can get my hands on legally. Of course I would never, you know, download movies or anything like that. Like, I torrent the Freedom Fiends, which I get freely from Michael, and I'm allowed to do that, you know. But this is one of those things. I was able to pick up the torrent from their site and throw it on my little torrent thing, and now it's being sent out there for other people to pick up and bounce around. So it's drone proof, you know. That's the whole reason the fiends are torrented. Just to keep it alive, and keep it out there. So yeah, once again, the Kratom Genome Project. Yeah, I'll put this in the show notes. And there's different things. Like I said, obviously they need money to try to move a little faster with this. And they're not trying to get a patent. They're trying to stop other people to do it. So if you're somebody who either uses Kratom, knows somebody who uses Kratom, or at least knows about Kratom and knows somebody who has had positive effects from this, then you may want to look into this and look at this link and figure out some way that you can help out, even if it's just like me, just like torrenting or whatever. Once I get a little money, I'm gonna try to donate too, because this is important. Because if they can find a way to stop the government, you know, the corporations to, you know, at the, you know, pretty much cut them off at the pass, so them trying to make these synthetic BS versions of these naturally occurring plants. that end up being more dangerous and will actually get you hooked, because that's the other thing they're claiming, that Kratom is extremely addictive, which again, I've come across no evidence of that whatsoever, but they can just say what they want, they're the government. But anyway, yeah, definitely look up the Kratom Genome Project and help this get spread around, because the quicker this does, the quicker we can stop worrying about this. And hundreds, thousands, maybe even more people who suffer from pain, suffer from different type of addictions that they're trying to get off of, suffer from a whole myriad of things, can get some help. Yeah. Thanks, government. Anyway, we'll be back in the second hour. Arms.
I love the Freedom Fiends, but in this modern busy world, I just don't have time to listen all the way through every episode.
There is a solution. Go to the World Wide Web and log on to digest.freedomfiends.com and subscribe to the Freedom Fiends Digest. Digest.freedomfiends.com has 20-minute best-ofs of each episode.
20-minute best-ofs? Digest.freedomfiends.com sounds great. How much does it cost?
That's the best part. It's free. And if you listen at 1.5 speed, they're only 13 minutes long. Plus, the episodes are only about 15 megs, which is great, because I have a limited data plan.
Wow. I'm at digest.freedomfiends.com right now. It's so simple to use. And anyone who doesn't have 13 minutes to listen to the Freedom Fiends is a big old statist.
I agree with you about people who can't find 13 minutes to listen to the Freedom Fiends Digest. That's digest.freedomfiends.com.
Welcome back to the Freedom Fiends, broadcasting through the Libertarian Reeducation Center's Low Orbit Ion Cannon, high atop Financial Beast Plaza on the artificial satellite LibPair 2017 in the Alpha Centauri region. And as always, the Freedom Fiends is covered by the BIPCOT No Government License. This allows use or reuse by anyone except governments and government agents. To learn more, go to BIPCOT.org. All right, and we're back in our second hour of the Freedom Fiends, and I'm here with John and Jeremy, and I believe, speaking of anecdotal evidence regarding drugs, I think John has a funny story that he was going to tell us about regarding some of his anecdotal experiences with his friends.
Go ahead.
I was just going to say, for anybody who's just joining us, we were talking a lot about different situations with drugs and the government in the first hour. So, that's what Shane's mentioning about the anecdotal evidence. But, it's turning out to be funny. Unfortunately, it doesn't start very funny.
What do you
got for us, John, with this this friend of yours?
Well, I definitely have some gutsy friends, and this guy... He goes back with me kind of to my rave days. When I was running that club that got raided, I pretty much gave up the illegal portion of the business to, get involved in activism and stuff like that. And he was the person who took over for me. And then a couple months later, the place got raided. So he spent a couple years in jail, and he's been out for a couple years, and he's been... going to school, trying to get involved in, the legal system to help addicts and, drug offenders, basically. So he got caught with, some drugs a couple weeks ago. And, this is just, it's just kind of a normal part of the lifestyle of the people that I know, what I'm saying? So it was, of course, the regular thing. He was getting a ride to a bar from his friend, and cop pulled him over and smelled weed as they were getting out of the car, and then, searched him without permission and found a couple things. And, my friend, he seems to have had enough, and he's saying that he's going to be making some very, very bold moves in court. So... First, he's going to offer two pleas, one of which is in exchange for 5 years.
Offer them pleas. That always goes well. I can tell you.
He's saying that he plans on them giving him some kind of a mental evaluation or holding him in contempt of court. But he said that he's just not going to back down to it anymore. And he knows that they're going to come at him, and they're going to come at him even harder if he tries to fight it. But he is throwing his body in the gears of the apparatus, so to speak. You know what I mean? I tried to tell him. I was like, are you sure you want to do this? And he's like, I want to do this. And he is basically, his defense is going to be, yeah, you caught me with drugs, so what? And, you know, you could say whatever, but it's going to be interesting to play out. I don't see stuff happen like that a whole lot, you know? I took some interest.
And what are the pleas you mentioned? What are the pleas that he was going to offer them?
He's going to offer them either he gives them 5 years of his life, like he, you know, signs guilty, 5 years of my life, but in return they would have to release every nonviolent offender in the jail in his county. And the second offer that he's giving them is he will work 20 hours a week for $50,000 a year to cure the heroin epidemic in that county in a year.
Man, I would go for that one if I was them, but yeah.
I'm sure it would be simple. All you got to do is legalize some things, set up some safe ingestion sites, you know what I mean?
Yeah, exactly.
It's not difficult. Know. We know the solutions, you know?
Well, yeah, we talked about that. Was that last week we talked about that, or maybe 2 weeks ago? The safe sites in Philly that they're trying to set up, because the situation in Philadelphia, they realize it's so out of hand, they have to do something different. And where some people think it would be insane to try that, no, that's exactly the type of thing you do. So, yeah, somebody could easily turn it around. And, heck, $50,000 is a heck of a lot less than I'm sure pretty much any police department spends on the drug war every year.
Yeah, and, yeah, absolutely.
You know, and especially if it could be, you know, the problems could be wiped out, then you don't have to pay, then you don't have the residual years to pay for either.
Exactly. So, yeah, I mean, he said he's perfectly, you know, expecting to get some kind of psych evaluation or them to react to him in an adversarial way. But, you know, he can't back down anymore, and he needs to speak his truth, even if it puts him in danger. So I got to at least tip my hat to him for that. I don't know if I would be that gutsy. Actually, I know I wouldn't be. But he feels pretty confident because apparently, I mean, he lives in New Jersey, and, you know, you think of Jersey as being, you know, super authoritarian, but they seem to be going a little bit lighter on the drugs recently. I saw a story this week where a guy in Jersey got caught with like 60 bricks of heroin, and he got probation.
Wow.
Wow.
Yeah. So go ahead.
I was just going to say, I haven't followed up recently, but I've said before that there's a weird thing with Jersey and New York. Like, they try to go back and forth with, like, different law. Like, there's certain things that are horribly, 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 you know, horrible here and are a little bit better in Jersey and vice versa. And then, like, there's some weird things that are just, like, people don't expect it to be, like, you know, be perfect. Like, the fact that I didn't need a business license for my business here where I am, people are like, that's insane. And over in Jersey, they, like, license everything. But, yeah, they do. They loosen up on certain things. So that doesn't surprise me necessarily.
And I'm thinking that some of those really bad cities in Jersey, you know, Camden and what's the one the Red Man's from? I forget. Yeah, I think that's it.
Newark?
Newark. That's Newark, yeah. The Bricks. Those places I think are probably overwhelming to the police, to the fact where they have to actually make some concessions. And
Camden, they give up like years ago. They gave up and they just put that was, I think, the first place in the States to have pretty much security cameras like installed by the state on like every corner, because the police weren't even willing to go out anymore. They just tried to record everything. I'm pretty sure that was Camden that happened. And Which is funny, because I was there. I used to hang out in Philly years ago when it wasn't as bad. And I just remember being a white boy working through parts of it and thinking years later, like, this would never happen. I would never be able to get away with it now. Bad person.
Yeah, I think they're definitely getting overwhelmed because they put this new bail policy into place where it's like this instant turnaround where if you get arrested with drugs, even if it's like selling drugs and stuff, you just get kind of like you're in jail for like a couple hours or they try to get you out as fast as possible just because of the fact that the jails are so overcrowded, not necessarily because they have any kind of sympathy for anyone.
Oh, that's interesting. When I see so many stories from other places around the country that are mad that they're, you know, the private prisons aren't being filled with, and they're all mad about it. They're trying to sue the state. They're trying to sue the states they're in for not filling them. I guess Jersey's the one of those places. they're not having that problem. Although, again, like you said, it seems that they're softening their stance because they were a lot harder for years. So they probably have a whole heck of a lot of people locked up. So yeah, eventually you run out of room in those places.
I hope it works out for your friend, and I would be really interested to see if they took his second plea deal, because you never know, he might actually be able to make a difference.
Well, he's planning on like trying to get a hold of people at MAPS and try to call them in as witnesses and stuff. Like, I don't know how possible that is, but you know, it's possible that somebody might be interested in doing it.
Yeah, I mean, I definitely tip my hat to him because of his ingenuity and some of this stuff. But I'm all for it, because either way, he's doing what I see as effectively gumming up the system to a certain extent. I highly encourage people to do anyway, and not take plea deals or make ridiculous ones that if they were ever to accept them, that you would still come out, you know. At least somebody would come out really well.
But yeah,
a whole bunch of people would come out well.
He's seeing it as a win-win, because if they take any of his pleas, then, you know, it's a win. And if they put him in front of a jury, that's what he wants. So
yeah, exactly. So I think that's one of those situations that, yeah, you really can't lose. You might as well. You know? And I encourage people to do it. Like I said, that's kind of, on some level, that's kind of why I'm doing what I'm doing with my situation. I'm seeing it through because, well, if nothing else, it's just more evidence that I could point to of how much money they'll waste over absolutely nothing.
Exactly. Are you almost done with all that stuff?
No. I have court again on Friday, I think. And I haven't heard from my lawyer since the last court date. So I'm pretty sure that means nothing has changed. And they're basically going to offer me the same BS, which means most likely I'm going to have to finally set a trial date. Uh-huh. And I'm going to have, you know, I was hoping to avoid that because, you know, it's more money I don't have and more time invested that I really don't want to. But I can't bring myself to accept the only offer they've actually officially made, because it's just complete BS. So I think
I've talked about. What is that, for you to leave town?
No, no.
I thought that was part of the negotiation you were setting up.
No, that was supposed to be part of the sell to convince them to dismiss it altogether. Was the fact that I was leaving town, you know, that my house is officially up for sale, which, you know, it actually is going. It is actually, I think it is officially now, because I decided to finally go with a real estate agent, because I found one that actually one of my clients who was not only willing to do it for me, but convinced me that I could actually sell my house for a lot more than I thought I could. So I'm just like, all right, go for it. So like, there's no denying I'm definitely trying to get out of here. But yeah, they their offer was, they still wanted me to plead guilty to something, it would be a misdemeanor, but still, they still wanted me to plead guilty to something and do a bunch of community service, which of course I have to pay in order to do, and anger management classes, which I also have to pay for, and an undisclosed amount of fines. So
wow.
Yeah.
Looking forward to the day when you can actually leave New Yorkistan and come visit us in the Midwest.
I'm leaving one way or another soon. I'm definitely, you know, like I said, the house, the official sign's going to be outside hopefully tomorrow, and that's going to start moving quickly. So we'll see, man. We'll see. We'll be back after the trip to the market. Arms.
Listening to the Freedom Fiends, an invigorating alternative to those other shows.
Ever struggle for the right thing to say at a party? Want something to break the ice? Get the free Freedom Fiends Android app, Pocket Alibi. Pocket Alibi will help you have things to say. It'll replace verbal communication when you're not speaking with somebody.
I value your input.
It'll make you the hit of any party.
Not my circus, not my monkeys.
Will it work?
Not a guarantee.
It's a great icebreaker, too. Comes loaded with hundreds of original funny sayings with great voices and great recording quality. It's arranged into 7 categories. Disclaimers.
You should never do the thing I'm talking about.
Excuses.
I'm sorry, sir. An older girl told me to do it.
Advice. Fun, too.
Get off me, kitty.
Libertarian pickup lines.
Hey, baby, hold my camera while I yell at this meter maid.
State speech is hate speech.
Bark, bark for the state.
Get Pocket Alibi today on Google Play for free. Again, search for Pocket Alibi. That's Pocket Alibi, A-L-I-B-I.
Pocket Alibi, Pocket Alibi, Pocket Alibi, Pocket Alibi, Pocket Alibi.
Does this app make me look fat?
Too busy talking to T-Talk Radio. All right. Well, we're back. And we were talking about, well, we started talking about John's friend and his interesting approach to his recent arrest for, you know, was that the story that with him and the other guy each had a whole bunch of different drugs on them?
Yeah. And the article said that they had narcotic mushrooms, which are Schedule One, which means it's the same as marijuana and heroin.
Narcotic mushrooms. That's just insane. I've never even heard that. What's a narcotic mushroom?
I don't know. Proving once again that they have no idea what they're talking about.
But it goes on to say stuff like, I mean, I hadn't even paid attention because I try to ignore that stuff, but is psilocybin considered a Schedule One still?
It's ridiculous, yeah.
Man. Anyway, yeah, so we were talking about that, and then we shifted into more, you know, because your friend's going to try an interesting legal technique, which, again, I encourage, because it's just, you know, not taking plea deals unless you could put yourself in a position to take a plea deal that'll actually help a whole bunch of people, because either one of those options would end up helping a whole bunch of people.
Yeah, definitely.
You know, but basically don't take a plea deal and go for it and just, you know, come up the system, because the more people that do that, then, you know, you can win, because otherwise you have to keep dealing with ridiculous stuff like, you know, the cops beating the ever-loving heck out of you. Although apparently one city's supposed to be changing this, although I don't know exactly how. I don't know. This story came from the Free Thought Project. Guess who, John?
Me, actually.
I know. Yeah, that's why.
I have a little bit of the background. It's also my area, too. Well, I mean, I live in Baltimore. I don't live near Baltimore, but it's one of the closest cities to me.
Yeah. Yeah, so it's in Baltimore, but the headline is that the city is now forcing bad cops to pay victims out of their own pockets, not the taxpayers, which of course would be a great thing, because that's always my biggest gripe when anybody ever says they want to sue the police, even if I believe they deserve some kind of compensation for what the police did to them, most of the time, you know, most of the time when people say they want to sue the police for whatever they did, I'm like, yeah, they definitely assault to do, or they definitely, you know, did whatever. Yeah, you definitely deserve something. But what most of those people don't realize is, of course, the taxpayers foot the bill. But what's going on in Baltimore that's supposed to be different these days, John?
So, interestingly enough, there's a new person on some kind of council. I forget what exactly their title is, secretary something or other. And they basically are putting this policy into effect where the officers are going to get charged. And now there are already 9 Baltimore City police officers who are on the hook for tens of thousands of dollars for cases where they were found to act with malice or whatever, which basically, I guess, is just another way of saying excessive force. But the really interesting thing about this is that the cops came out and they put out this email to their police union, or through the police union, and they said this is something entirely new. This is like a new law. And the guy came back and says, no, we're just enforcing what always should have been. Apparently, in most cities, there is no law requiring cities to cover the bill for corrupt police officers. Most of them just do it voluntarily. And here in Baltimore, the guy's saying, we're going to stop doing that voluntarily.
Yeah, it was the city solicitor. Andre Davis. Yeah, he says no. This is the, you know, he said straight out that the police union, based on, you know, the letter they put out that you're referring to, that they're based, that they're straight out lying, that this isn't a new thing. This has actually been the case for, I think he said, decades or something.
Yeah, so, it just hasn't been enforced. It's just that the city has voluntarily gone along and paid all these lawsuits when there was no law requiring them to all along. It was just a kind of a behind the scenes cooperation.
Yeah, and you even mentioned, like, it's the bureaucrats are usually involved in that too. It's not just, you know, it's not just the police, you know, the police department saying, oh yeah, we're going to cover these guys. No, bureaucrats get involved and they're like, oh okay, yeah, sure, no, we'll take care of this. We have a fund somewhere for this type of thing. And yeah, millions upon millions upon millions of dollars are awarded to people in all these different situations. Which, again, I have no problem with them being compensated for what happened to them. I encourage that type of behavior. But when it comes out of other people's pockets, that to me, that just, you know, that's, you're not actually paying for your crime that way there, buddy.
And it's no deterrent or, you know, incentive for them to improve their actions. You know, it just shows that they're above the law.
Yeah, exactly. But although there are some other issues that I have with this, but we will have to talk about that more when we come back from this trip to the market. Worms.
Freedom Fiends with Michael Dean. This is what radio sounds like now.
Are you sick of government lackeys who say, you didn't build that? Are you tired of elitists who think you need a government permission slip for everything? Everything you do is an A to B conversation, and the government should see their way out of it. Create true free markets by adopting the BIPCOT No Government License. The BIPCOT NoGov license allows use or modification of any product, service, or software except by governments or government agents. Go to BIPCOT.org. That's Bravo, India, Papa, Charlie, Oscar, Tango.org.
Talking about the situation in Baltimore, where allegedly the cops are going to have to start paying out of their own pocket if they go a beating on anybody. Of course, again, this is all predicated on, you know, actual malice being able to be proven, which there of course is a very specific definition of malice, and they must be able to prove that this was actually the case. And, you know, while I hope more cops would be able to be, you know, curtailed this way, unfortunately, I don't have much faith in the system for that actually to happen. And, you know, there's also, it's nice to see that there's a rift between this one particular solicitor who's, you know, not afraid to come out and say, no, the police union's completely lying about this. we're just basically trying to follow the rules that nobody else is willing to follow beforehand. And as you had mentioned, John, apparently this is the case in a lot of cities across the country where they're not required to pay out of the taxpayer funds in order to, you know, take care of these giant lawsuits. They just do it anyway. It's usually the bureaucrats and stuff. And I was mentioning as we hit the break that I still have some other issues with this. And of course, number one for me is that, okay, fine. Yes, if it has to come out of the cop's pocket instead of like a giant fund from the taxpayers, that's better. But where does the cop's paycheck come from in the first place? It still comes from the taxpayer money.
Exactly.
You know, if that happens and, you know, they definitely lose their job and they definitely get, you know, they don't get their pension and all that other stuff, because that's the thing that drives me one of the most insane, is a lot of these cops, even if they end up leaving the force after whatever happens for them, a lot of them won't, you know, most of them don't see jail time at all, you know. many of them don't get convicted. And even the ones who do, most of them end up walking away relatively easily. And even if they, you know, they have to resign from the force, they still end up getting money somehow, some way down the road. And they still end up being able to collect taxpayer funds, which just drives me up a wall. So, you know, as long as all those things are happening, again, to me, it's better, but it's still not great, because any of these cases where it has happened before, it hasn't seemed to deter too many people from doing it again. Because again, that's supposed to be the purpose of this, is also to deter police officers. Because, well, if I'm actually going to have to pay for it, well, then maybe I won't kick this guy in the head once I have the cuffs on him, and you know, all this type of stuff.
it is crazy, and it kind of sucks that, like, you know, in some circumstances you end up celebrating these small victories, even though it's like a fraction of what is right and just, you know what I mean?
Yeah. And like I said, you're right. I mean, you're right. As much as I complain, I've always said, you know, if it isn't a positive direction, then I can't really, I'm not going to, you know, I may complain about it, but it's still, I'd rather
have
that.
Your points are valid.
Yeah.
Yeah. Your points are valid, and they're good to bring up, so we understand the philosophy, you know what I'm saying? Or so other people do as well.
Yeah, well, thank you. But yeah, no, like I said, you can take away some positive things from this. I mean, hopefully, you know, and apparently the whole outrage, you know, the reason the police union was trying to cover their tracks originally, and the fact that a lot of cops are up in arms about this type of thing right now, is because I think there's like 9 police officers in Baltimore right now who are currently in different stages of possibly being indicted or charged or whatever, and they're facing, like, you know, all of them are facing, you know, tens of thousands of dollars worth of damages against them. So they're, of course, all freaking out, because they're coming to the realization that they can't do this. You know, I don't remember if any of those people were the ones that were involved in Freddie Gray. I hope so. Because didn't most of them get away with that? I don't remember. I think they did, didn't they?
Yeah, they all got away with that. And there's also like this other corruption probe going on in Baltimore right now, and it is the one where the cop who got killed was supposed to be a witness, and there is all this crazy stuff coming out, like that the cops rolled around with trash bags full of BB guns that they could just throw on bodies that they killed, so then it looked like the person had a gun in the photos. And all sorts of stuff like that. And a reporter asked the mayor about the case, and the mayor was like, "Oh, I don't have time to worry about that. I don't know anything about that."
I don't have time to worry about that. It's just the cops being cops. Yeah, one of the most corrupt police departments.
it's just the cops doing their job, you know.
It's such a shame, too. I remember, I haven't been to Baltimore forever. I used to go down there a lot. It used to be one of my favorite cities. But the last time I was down there was years ago. I mean, it was when, Camden Yards, right? That's where the Orioles Stadium is now.
Yeah.
I think when the year Camden Yards first came in, so what was that, like mid-90s? Maybe late 90s,
yeah,
somewhere around
ago.
There. Yeah, it was still not, wasn't too bad down there. I mean, I remember remarking, coming from New York, walking down the streets of the city, around the stadium and everything, and going, everything's so clean. There wasn't litter all over the place. There wasn't graffiti all over the place.
Well, that is kind of just that 4 or 5 block radius around the harbor.
Yeah, but even that, it was even further than that. It was still, but I went there later, and it had started to creep into the harbor too.
Oh yeah, the harbor is trash now. There used to be like kind of like an oasis of you know, and not total, you know, cesspool war zone, and that has kind of changed over the years.
Yeah, I know, that's what I'm saying, because that's what I remember. I remember about Baltimore back in those days when it was still nice. There were still nice areas. It's a shame, but yeah, it's just, There's so many stories that have been coming out, you're right, and it's crazy. So, again, I guess we'll have to take small victories. Hopefully stuff comes of this, because, yeah, there's a lot of bad stuff. Although that is, again, talking about this particular, you know, these the city actually enforcing regulations or whatever, instead of letting them go all these years and saying, no, we don't have to pay this stuff. It's not only a step in the right direction, but also it's they don't necessarily have to be, it doesn't have to be somebody who was actually charged and go to jail. Like, people can still have to have actual civil payments paid out, even if the system works the way it normally does and the cops get away with it. People can still end up getting civil payments through this, as long as, again, you have to go through the hoops of being able to prove the malice. But unfortunately, a lot of times that's the best you're going to get. But, you know, hey, if you can get a lot of money... If you gain a lot of money out of the deal, even if the SOB doesn't get put in jail for it, at least that's a win in some respect, right?
Yeah, and I mean, now with a lot of, you know, with the cameras and stuff, a lot of these cases, the malice is obvious. And that's probably why 9 cops are already, you know, worried about this, because I'm guessing in those situations there was some kind of proof or video that showed them pummeling somebody or whatever.
Yeah, there are quite a number of those. Although, unfortunately, there's also quite a number that there just isn't any evidence. Not because they didn't have cameras, because there, you know, how many times do you see the stories of the camera conveniently wasn't on? I mean, there's that one guy.
Oh, I'm talking about the cell phone cameras. Oh, yeah, but the body cameras.
Yeah, but I'm saying, like, sometimes that's the only one that's available.
Oh, yeah, and they like to turn them off for sure.
Yeah, unfortunately, a lot of those ones don't actually.
Or they just don't release the video.
Yeah. Or much, much later. Yeah, the advancements in technology and the fact that everybody has a phone in their hands can be as annoying as all get out in some respects. But in that respect, you know, hey, can't hide anymore, which is, you know, good. Because they've gotten, they, you know, we're talking about Baltimore, it's how bad it is there, but it's not just there. It's so many places where things have just gotten absolutely, completely out of hand. And hopefully, you know, whatever small measure this is, hopefully more cities, especially the ones that actually have these laws on the books, start enforcing them. Because, like I said, that's what always makes me mad about these cases.
As I understand it, it's one of these situations where in most cities, police officers or agents of the state don't have protections against lawsuits. So if you sue a cop in most states, legally, it's just the same as a person-to-person lawsuit. But they have played these games behind the scenes where police are treated differently. And that isn't like rules on the books. That's just the way that things have operated. And no, so yeah, there's no law on the books saying the cops must pay, but there is no law addressing it at all in most places. It's just the way things have developed.
Yes. The almighty precedent. It's funny. We were talking about my recent Seas of Liberty podcast. We were talking about the whole idea of precedent and what kind of value it has. But yeah, this is the bad end of it. You don't actually have to write things down. You just go, oh, this is the way we work. This is the way it works. And everybody just, over the years, everybody just accepts it. To the point where, you know, we're talking about this and, you know, when I first read this article, this came as a shock to me because I just assumed that that was the way. I didn't just think that's the way it ended up working out. I literally thought that's the way things were structured because that's the way it's presented. You know, I just always assumed that the police were immune to that to some respect, and that it was the taxpayers that foot the bill, because, you know, in most situations that's usually what ends up happening. So I just assume that, oh yeah, look how badly they take advantage of the situation, just like everybody else. But yeah, it's even worse that it's not written in, that they're just getting away with it and people just go, oh,
they
okay.
They are still immune in situations where it is deemed that they're acting in the line of duty. So if they're chasing down a heroin dealer and tackle them and, you know, put a bunch of weight and force on them and mess them up real bad, that would probably be considered justifiable. But if he tackled them and then knocked them in the head a bunch of times, that's when it would be considered malice. And obviously both are wrong, but yeah.
Well, yeah, that's what I was saying before, that unfortunately, while this does seem to be a positive step, and in some respects it is, you still have to jump through the hurdle of actually being able to prove the malice. And while we were talking about the fact that there's, you know, more videos of these things now and more people are aware of this stuff, unfortunately, I've still seen some of these cases, even with, like, I've seen cops get out of, you know, the criminal case, you know, things be acquitted and stuff like that, even with video evidence.
Well, the Simon Says guy that was crawling around the floor and got shot.
Well, exactly. So, yeah, like I said, anything positive good is good.
You're listening to Freedom Fiends with Michael Dean and some of his weird friends. And yes, we're broadcasting this into space.
You know you want to be a filmmaker. As Rick of Rick and Morty says, school's not a place for smart people. Nowhere is this more true than film school. Don't waste years and $100,000 being taught by those who couldn't make it. Just get a camera and a $7 Kindle version of $30 Film School 3rd Edition. $30 Film School 3rd Edition is the recent update on the classic 2003 book that helped spark the do-it-yourself filmmaking revolution. Written by DIY filmmaker Michael W. Dean, whose high-quality, low-budget movies star Academy Award winners and nominees, get worldwide distribution, and have been in many respected film festivals. The first two editions sold over 100,000 copies, and it's recommended reading in many colleges. The book is back, updated for today's high-def consumer cameras, but still has the same self-starter ethic and tips that no other book has. Get it delivered this minute to your Kindle or phone for only $7. Go to Amazon and type in $30 Film School 3rd Edition. That's $30 Film School 3rd Edition.
And we're back for the final segment. And we have a little bit of redemption that, well, I find redeeming. I don't know. I don't know how many other people may. I think the three of us may. But yeah, this is a story that John, you wrote another one. This was great. But this is about a community-based navigation app that's designed to help immigrants cross the border between the U.S. and Mexico, or anywhere, I guess, because it's actually
illegally.
Yeah, if you need to cross back and forth across the border, this app is designed pretty much to help you route your path to the safest places. This is amazing.
And it works kind of in the same way that Waze does, where there are live updates from people all over the place, letting you know where there's cameras, where there's guards, where there's checkpoints, where there's holes in the fence, all that stuff.
Yeah, that's pretty crazy. Although I did see one of the comments I saw when you posted it was something to the effect that, you know, this could very easily just be used by the Border Patrol, like ICE and stuff like that, to, you know, basically the same way that they tried to do it with Waze, where they were basically sending out false reports and trying to mess up the system. I mean, that happened in a bunch of places where the cops were trying to overload the Waze reporting with cops and, you know, either removing the locations that people had put the cops were actually there, or putting them up where cops weren't in order to try to circumvent all that. And, you know, they could, you know, the ICE could very easily get a hold of something like this too and use it to their advantage, unfortunately. But I love the idea. So
yeah, and it's one of those things where they're always going to need, I feel like they're always going to need more enforcement than they actually have. And for a situation like this, sure, they can try to reroute things and they can try to set up in areas where the arrows are pointing for people, but I feel like they would need a lot more manpower to do that effectively, at least.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, just like anything else, the people in the positions of power are always completely outnumbered, and that's what most people don't realize. That's why, like, you know, one of my favorite memes ever is that one where it's like, I guess it's the politician standing out on the little plank
with his
podium, and all the people standing on it. It's just basically, you know, the message is basically, you know, if people only
walk away,
know their true power, all you have to do is walk away, and the the leader falls because nobody, if you know, nobody's listening to him, then what does it matter if he calls himself the leader? Yeah, exactly. It's a great one. But that's the whole idea. People don't, you know, most people don't realize that in almost every single situation, the people, whether it's the police, whether it's the border guards, whether it's even the military, anything, they're always outnumbered. Most people just don't take that into account. They just assume that it's, you know, they've been convinced that they have to bow to this authority or that authority, and there's nothing they could possibly do anyway. So, you know, but yeah, I do think you're right, John. I think that while they could try to abuse this, the border patrol or even, you know, the local police or whatever could try to use the system to their advantage, I think they're definitely still going to be completely outnumbered. And, you know, the only way they can get around that is if all that money gets dumped in that so many people are clamoring for, you know, for the wall and more enforcement, and the more radical, insane ones that claim that they could, it can all be done with drones and just basically hellfire missiles.
It's insane.
Shoot it. Yeah, it is insane, but I've heard people actually make this claim, including my co-host on the Seeds of Liberty, who sees it as completely irrational to have a border like that.
You said he sees it as completely rational?
Yes.
Oh, wow.
Maybe not hellfire missiles, but some kind of drone set up on the border where, you know, he's convinced them won't cost
peace
a lot
drones.
Of money. Yeah, peace drones, but, you know, apparently he forgets, and people like him forget how much money they actually charge to run those drone programs. So that's not cheap either. Anyway, so yeah, so this app is great. You know, I'll put the link to this in the show notes too, but and you mentioned, you know, they this is also going to be tried to use in Europe too. So it's a great idea because I don't subscribe to the same thing that those crazy people do. I don't think you're violating the non-aggression principle by stepping on public land. So if you want to try to take advantage of that, get over here and make yourself some money, go for it. Well, it's been fun, guys. Thank you, as always, for joining me. Thank you, everybody, for listening. And for more of us, go to freedomfiends.com.
Peace.
Worms.
Worms.